flown, I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Thank you very much. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Judy Garland.
Hi, Bing.
Hi, Judy. I just got the news. They tell me you're shoving off for Europe in a week
or so. Yep, I'm off to London. I'm going to play the Palladium. Mm. I'm really excited about
it. Oh, now, don't get jittery about that, Judy. You'll be a smash. You'll be a positive smash. Why, wouldn't surprise me one bit if you were invited to do a command performance and you were presented to the King and the Queen.
Oh, golly, you think so?
Sure. You may even be presented to Danny Kaye.
Better than that, I might get to meet Douglas Fairbanks, Jr.
Oh, that's too much. Can't expect everything, Judy. Not that you don't deserve it. You've worked hard and everything. Judy, you love working at the Palladium. Those English audiences are just crazy about American performers. Dorothy L'Amour was terrific there. Jimmy Durante was a sensation. Burns and Allen, a riot. Bob Hope was absolutely mediocre.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Just a minute.
Bing? Bob was terrific over there.
I know, I just didn't want to say so. Well, anyhow, Judy, what kind of song are you going to do? What kind of material are you
going to
do?
Well, I'm going to do some old ones, some new ones, you
know.
Mix
them up. Well, you got a sample handy?
Well, here's one of the old ones, When You're Smiling.
That's a pretty one.
Okay.
I like that.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. When you're laughing, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, be happy again, keep on smiling. When you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles at you. When you're laughing, when you're laughing, the sun comes shining through. When you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop that sighing. Be happy. Don't forget to keep on smiling.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you all had a wonderful 4th of July and you're enjoying a terrific summer. Tonight, we hope to enhance your season by giving you two wonderful mystery gems. We begin with a delicious episode of suspense, and then we finish up with an equally delicious episode of The Whistler. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. I'll be sure and answer you. Now, let's enjoy our great shows. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Ava Gardner, in a remarkable tale of suspense.
The rain was coming down in torrents, washing huge streaks of gravel from the hillsides onto the road. It was getting dark, and I was beginning to worry. He stuck out his hand when he saw me, and I stopped.
You're going to town?
By the lower road. Is that all right?
Well, that's even better. Thanks, lady.
Out of the corner of my eye, I looked him over. He was fairly young, a little pale and nervous. There was no real fear there, and there was a lot of strength. The kind I liked.
It's a miserable-looking world tonight, but it's great to be out in it.
Maybe you're right.
I know I'm right. Little somebody takes the privilege away from you of going where you want to go and doing what you want to do. And you know how good it is to be out.
You used the word out twice. Did you just get out of someplace?
Yeah.
Where?
It's my business.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so am I. Shouldn't be so touchy with you. You were nice to me, giving me a ride. Only if I told you where I came from, it might frighten you.
I don't think it would.
Look at me. There's only one place a guy like me would get out of.
Jail?
They call it the state penitentiary.
Oh, yes, I passed it a half hour ago. Did you just get out?
Just got out, this morning.
This morning? This is Sunday.
So what?
The state penitentiary doesn't release men on Sunday. Only on weekdays.
Well, they released me. You think I broke out? Well, maybe you're wrong, and maybe you're right. What are you jumping for? I'm just reaching for a cigarette. Mind if I smoke?
No, you can smoke.
Cigarette?
No, thanks.
What are you getting nervous about?
I'm not nervous.
See? I told you if you knew where I came from, you'd be frightened. It's natural.
Why did you tell me?
I just felt like talking. I haven't talked to a dame, a lady, for a long time.
Like it?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I don't think I ever talked to one quite like you before. You know what you got on a ball, every bit of it.
You like that?
I could try.
Don't get me wrong. I don't usually pick people up.
Okay, relax. I'm not going to do anything to you. Just drive me into the city and let me off. Of course, it would be nice if you didn't say anything to anybody about picking me up.
I won't say anything.
What are you turning in here for?
I'm hungry. I haven't eaten anything all day.
You can wait a little while longer.
We have 90 more miles to drive, and I'm going to get a sandwich now.
Okay. Wait a minute. Let's just understand. You know what this is, don't you?
It's a gun.
And it shoots. Don't forget that.
I won't.
Okay, on your way. After you.
Well, nice weather for ducks, huh, folks?
Yeah. You, all alone in here, Mac?
Yep, glad you dropped in. Suppose you're in a hurry to get home, though. Back to the kiddies and the mother-in-law, huh?
Yeah.
Now, what do you have?
Coffee and a hamburger, please.
Make it two.
Coming up. Everything on those burgers?
Sure.
Well, what's a little onion among friends, huh?
Excuse me a minute.
Hey, where are you going?
If you're going over to use that telephone, lady, you might just as well not bother. It's out of order. I'm trying to get it fixed.
Oh, I wasn't going to use the phone. I was going to get some cigarettes.
You don't say.
I knew he didn't believe me. He didn't say anything, but the way he looked at me, I could tell. We finished our hamburgers and I paid for them, and then we went back to the car.
What'd you want to make a telephone call for?
I wasn't going to.
Wasn't because of me, was it?
I told you I wasn't going to make a call. I just wanted some cigarettes.
You turned down my cigarette a little while ago.
They were the wrong brand.
You bought the same brand I offered you. Who are you trying to kid, beautiful?
Oh, let's not talk about it. It's not important. What are you going to do now that you're out?
I got a job to do. I got to take care of somebody.
You mean your family?
No, Gil. Somebody I got to buy a coffin for. As a matter of fact, I'm not even going to buy the coffin. I'm just going to make it easier for somebody to get one.
Sounds an awful lot like you mean you're going to kill somebody.
It's as easy as that. I am.
Why?
I told you, I just got out of prison, didn't I?
Well, you don't want to get back in.
It doesn't happen to make much difference. You see, there isn't much useful left in my life. I'm through.
Revenge, huh?
Yeah. With all these debts settled, a guy could die happy.
That's a strange philosophy.
Is it? What are you driving so fast for?
I'm in a hurry. I have to get home.
Mm-hmm. It's okay with me. The sooner I get this thing over, the better.
Get what over?
Hey, that's a cop. That's what you get for driving so fast.
Why, I didn't realize it.
Pull over. If they ask any questions, tell them I'm your brother. See, your brother.
I will.
Don't say anything you'd be sorry for, beautiful.
You're going pretty fast for these wet roads, lady.
I'm sorry. I really didn't realize it.
If you'd skidded into a telephone pole, you would have. Let me see your license.
It must be here somewhere.
That your husband?
No. Now, that's my brother. Oh, here's the license.
Thanks. Oh. Where have I seen this name before?
I don't know.
Oh, sure. Your husband's in the department, isn't he?
Well, yes, he is.
Nervous about something?
No, I'm just tired.
Okay. But just take it easy from now on. Here's your license.
I will. Thanks a lot.
So your husband's in the police department?
Yes.
Maybe you'll get a promotion.
They're catching you?
Don't be foolish. Nobody's going to catch me unless I want them to. Not even you, beautiful.
What did you mean about my husband? About his getting a promotion?
Well, just between you and me, you know what I mean. Somebody I got to take care of is also in the department.
What department?
Don't act dumb. The police department.
Oh.
Keep your eyes on the road.
I am.
You weren't. You were looking at me.
Well, what do you expect me to do? You don't exactly make me comfortable sitting there.
You recognized me, didn't you? Didn't you?
I'm not sure.
Yes, you are. And that could be a mistake.
Believe me, I don't know who you are or anything about you.
That's a lie. Stop looking at me.
All right.
I'm going to kill Ralph Harris.
I don't want to know anything about it.
Yes, you do. You know Ralph pretty well.
No, I don't. I never heard of him.
Stop dummying up. I saw the license when you handed it to the cop. I'm going to kill your husband, Mrs. Harris. You knew it back a few miles on the road. I could see it the way you looked at me. You know, somehow I get the idea you're not going to mind that like you should. Why don't you say something?
I can't think of anything.
Now that you know, I think you and me are going to have a little understanding.
What are you doing?
Nothing. Just reaching for your pocketbook.
I only have $10 in it.
I don't need money that bad.
Then what?
I'm going to get you a dress. Women carry more things. Here it is. 627 Mill Street, huh? Here, you can have your pocketbook back. I'm going to take the license. I want to make sure I don't forget.
What are you going to do with me?
I haven't quite decided yet, beautiful. I haven't quite decided.
I glanced over at him again. I knew he meant it exactly. He hadn't quite decided. Things had gone far enough. From here on out, I had to make it convincing or else. Look, Sullivan.
Oh, so you do know my name.
Yes, I know your name. I remember you. I was at trial. They framed you.
Did he tell you that?
They didn't have to. The whole department knew it. They needed a conviction, and you were it.
That's what I thought. You know a lot, don't you?
Listen, suppose I told you that you were right in what you said a minute ago. That I hated my husband. That I hated him as much as you do. And that I'd hated him for years.
What do you think?
Well?
I'd say it was a stall to save your own neck.
That's what I thought. That's why I wanted to get acquainted with you first.
First? Before what?
Well, doesn't it seem a little funny to you, my just happening to run into you this way? The wife of the man you've sworn to kill? On the very day you break out of prison?
Who says I broke out?
I know someone who knows Red Farley.
Red Farley?
Mm-hmm. He was your contact on the outside that helped you plan it, wasn't he?
Listen, beautiful. I don't know how you got this.
Where do you think Red Farley got the money?
You tell me.
I'll tell you. I want you to kill my husband. I'll even help you. He was beginning to believe me now. When I told him that I knew who'd helped him make the prison break. When I told him that I'd put up the money for it. When I told him that the man he wanted to kill was the man I wanted to kill. When I told him that man was my own husband. We drove along for quite a while without saying anything. Then I pulled into a gas station.
What's the idea of coming in here? You don't need gas.
You still don't trust me, do you?
I don't know.
Look, Sullivan, I have to make a phone call to my husband.
Oh, no. I'm not that dumb, beautiful.
But I have to call him. I told him I would. If I don't, he'll think something's wrong. You can listen.
All right. I'll listen.
Where's your phone?
Oh, it's just inside the door.
Thanks.
It's right in here, lady. Right on the wall. Right on the wall there, lady. Got your nickel?
Look, I know how to use the phone. You don't have to act like you're Orson Welles.
Hello?
Ralph.
Yes?
This is Evelyn. I'm 25 miles from the city. The rain slowed me up.
You should have started earlier.
I know, but I didn't.
Everything all right?
Yes, everything's all right.
Well, I'm glad to see you're getting some sense in your head. Hurry up and get here.
Well, it won't take long.
You're not going to give me any more trouble, are you?
No, Ralph. From now on, I don't think you have a thing to worry about. We drove on into town then. I didn't say anything more and neither did Sullivan. But I knew I had him. He was still playing cautious, but I knew I had him. Well, here's where I let you off. Oh, the rain's almost stopped.
Okay. But listen, beautiful, don't try to double-cross me.
I won't double-cross you.
You'd make a mistake if you did.
Sullivan.
Yeah?
My husband always keeps his car in the garage. Every night, just as it gets dark, he walks into the garage to get the car. Alone.
You know, you're quite a dish, beautiful.
And there's no light in the garage.
Come here. Good night, beautiful.
There's only a few more blocks to the house. Ralph was waiting up for me, and he seemed genuinely happy to see me. A month ago, Ralph and I had one of our usual fights, and I went north to stay with my mother. But I realized that I couldn't stay with her forever, and the only thing left for me to do was to come back. And I hated it, crawling back to a man who had no heart, who ran his home like a lockup pen down at police headquarters. But I had no choice. Ralph was smug about my coming back, as I knew he would be. I kept wondering if Sullivan was actually going through with it. 2 days later, I knew.
Good morning, Mrs. Harris.
Get inside. Someone might see you. How did you know I was alone?
I got friends. Your husband's working right now. He won't be home for 5 hours.
What do you want, Sullivan?
Let's not act like children. I said I was going to kill your husband, and I meant it.
What are you coming here for at this time of day?
See this?
A little box?
Yeah. When you do the wrong thing with it, it blows up.
Oh.
All I do is put this under the hood of somebody's car, hook it up to the starter, and when somebody gets in his car to drive off somewhere, all he does is step on the starter, and he doesn't have to worry about driving a car ever again.
Oh.
Let's go out to the garage, beautiful.
We went out to the garage. Sullivan hooked the explosive up under the hood of Ralph's car. Then after a while, he went away. All the rest of the day, I was nervous and worried. The last minute, I even wanted to go out and disconnect it, but I didn't. It was foolish to be nervous, and it had all gone along fine so far. By the time Ralph came home, I was composed and tried not to show that anything was any different than it always was. After dinner, Ralph was doing some paperwork on a housebreaking case.
Oh, these reports are a nuisance.
Anything I can do to help you?
No. You know less about these reports than I do.
Oh, I just thought maybe there might be something.
Well, there isn't, so stop bothering.
All right, Ralph.
Wait a minute. There is something you can do.
What?
Go out and get the car and bring it around to the front.
No.
What? What are you looking so surprised about? As soon as I finish the report, I want to run down to the station. Did it save time if you got the car out?
I'd rather not.
What's the matter with you?
Well, I have trouble getting out of the driveway. It's too narrow.
Ah, you've taken the car out 100 times. What are you talking about?
Well, Ralph, I've got a cold coming on. I'd rather stay inside.
Put a coat on. It isn't cold out anyway.
I don't want to drive your car.
Look, the least you could do is help me out once in a while when I asked you to. Heaven knows you never do anything for me anyway.
Well, it won't save that much time.
Get the car out before I get mad.
All right, Ralph. If you want me to, I'll get the car. What did I do? I went out and opened the garage doors and putted around for a few minutes and slammed the door a couple of times. And I went back in the house.
Well?
Well, what, Ralph?
Is the car out in front?
Wouldn't start.
What do you mean it wouldn't start?
Oh, I don't know. It just wouldn't start. The motor wouldn't jump.
Oh, you give me nothing but trouble.
It isn't my fault. It's your car.
All right, forget it.
Why don't you go out and try it yourself?
Because I won't, that's all. I've been having trouble with my battery. It's probably run down again. If it wouldn't start for you, it won't start for me. I'll look at it tomorrow sometime.
I'll do what you want.
Wait a minute.
Excuse me. I have some reading.
Well, wait a minute.
What do you want?
Call up headquarters and have them send a cruiser around for me.
I could hardly sleep that night. Why of all times did Ralph have to ask me to get his car? It's almost as if he suspected. I knew he'd have to get the car sometime, but I was afraid he might check over the car and find out what was wrong with it, and discover the mechanism. Or he might send a mechanic out from a garage to look at it, and an innocent person would be killed. And I was afraid of Sullivan by this time, terribly afraid. I was exhausted from nervousness and lack of sleep when I got out of bed the next day. Ralph had breakfast and went off to work in the police cruiser. I didn't dare go near the garage. I didn't dare do anything, except just wait. Yes?
Sullivan speaking.
Oh, hello.
I've been reading all the papers, and I haven't seen anything about your husband yet.
Yes, I know.
What happened?
Well, last night, he didn't take the car.
Why not?
I don't know why not. He just didn't, that's all.
Mrs. Harris, you wouldn't try to stall me, would you?
No, I swear that's what happened. He left the car in a... He left the house in a police cruiser. He didn't take his car.
You know what I think?
No, what?
I think I'm going to take a run out there and check up myself. Your husband isn't home, is he?
No. No, he won't be home for 3 hours.
Okay, beautiful. You can expect me.
Well, you could at least... Oh, wow.
Who did you expect? Winston Churchill?
Well, it isn't time for you to be home.
Who said there was a certain time for me to be home?
You know. You don't usually get home this early.
Well, there wasn't much doing today. I have a few hours coming to me. What's the matter with you?
Nothing. Why?
You're nervous about something. Don't tell me you have a boyfriend hiding in the closet.
You may look if you want to.
I wouldn't bother. All right, come on. Come on out with it. What's on your mind? What do you keep looking out the window for?
Oh, stop examining me like a criminal. I just didn't sleep well last night. I'm tired.
You don't do anything to get tired. Where you going?
When you came in, I was just on my way to the market. Do you mind? I have to get my coat. Do you want me to explain any more?
Say everything.
What's wrong, Ralph?
I just thought I saw somebody go into our garage. Come here. Look, garage door's half open.
Oh, yes, I forgot to tell you. I called the garage and had them send a man to look at the battery. He'll take care of everything.
Yeah? I'm going out and take a look myself.
You don't have to. He knows his job.
Sometimes I don't think you have any brains at all. I'll be right back.
I stood there at the window watching. I knew who was in the garage, and it wasn't a mechanic. It was Sullivan. Ralph walked off the back porch and across the yard, and then into the garage. I didn't know what was going to happen. I kept thinking, only one man will come out of there alive. And then I thought, maybe I'll be lucky. Maybe neither of them will come out alive. I pulled the curtain back so I could see more clearly. And then I waited what seemed hours, staring through the window. I couldn't hear a thing, and nobody came out. Nobody. I moved closer, my face pressed against the glass. And then just before it happened, somehow I could hear it coming.
Operator.
Get me the police headquarters.
Just a moment.
Police headquarters, Sergeant Thompson speaking.
This is Mrs. Ralph Harris. There's been an accident, an explosion.
We'll be right out, Mrs. Harris. You all right?
The window broke. A big piece of glass. My throat. One way I was lucky. Neither of them did come out alive. But another way I wasn't so lucky. I'm going to die.
A tree in the meadow where the stream drifting by and carved upon that tree I see I love you till I die I shall always remember the love in your eyes, the day you carved upon that tree. I love you till I die.
But further on, down Lover's Lane, a silhouette I see. I know you're kissing someone else. I wish that it were me.
By that tree in the my thoughts always lie, and wherever you go, you'll always know I love you till I die. But further know till I die.
Remember to take the journey on Sunday nights at 10 p.m. to midnight with Musical Star Streams, hosted by Forrest. Each week brings a new two-hour episode of Exotic Electronica. It follows Radio Masterpieces, which airs at 9 p.m. on Valley 104.9, your community station. And thanks for listening to Valley 104.9.
And now, the Whistler's strange story, Final Decree.
As the two hunters made their way along the base of the canyon, neither was aware of the figure standing well hidden in the trees on the ridge above them. When Gordon Weller reached the small creek, he turned, looked back at his friend Dr. Perryman puffing up the path behind him. Gordon grinned and picked his way across the creek and started up the mountain. As he circled a huge boulder and came into a clearing, at the sound, Dr. Perryman stopped suddenly. An expression of horror crossed his face as he saw Gordon Weller stretched out on the path before him.
Gordon! Gordon! Are you hurt?
No. No, I guess I'm all right, Doc.
Great Scott, you gave me quite a jolt. Here, well, let me give you a hand.
Thanks. Thanks.
I heard the shot. Saw you fall.
I just stumbled, that's all. Lucky thing I did.
What?
Look at that tree there. That branch. Still swaying. A bullet must have nicked it.
Good Lord.
Shot came from somewhere up along that ridge.
Crazy fool. I tell you, Gordon, some of these idiots who go hunting, I've a good mind to chase up there after whoever did this.
No, never mind, Doc.
Well, I just like to go up there and give them a piece of my mind, by George. Say, you don't suppose it could be anyone in our party, do you?
No, I don't think so. They're on the other side of the mountain.
That shot could have killed you, Gordon, if you hadn't stumbled when you did.
Sure. Come along, let's go back to the lodge.
But doggone, I'd like to
get excited. It was just an accident.
But you know it wasn't an accident, don't you, Gordon? It was another attempt on your life. You're certain of that. And you didn't tell your friend Dr. Perryman that a split second before the shot was fired, you caught a glimpse of reflected light high on the ridge. The rays of the sun striking a rifle barrel, perhaps. And instantly you dropped to the ground. Hours later, back at your lodge high in the mountains, all your guests are assembled in the huge living room before the massive stone fireplace. The Farleys, Bill Kenny and his new wife, Betty. The Wilsons, Dr. Perryman. And, of course, your wife, Joyce. You enjoy entertaining, don't you, Gordon? The smart parties in town. The weekends here at your fashionable mountain lodge. Yes, you like having your friends around. The feeling of security that goes with it.
I tell you, Joyce, this husband of yours is lucky to be alive.
Gordy leads a charmed life, didn't you know? Nothing could ever happen to him.
Well, that was a close one, all right.
Charmed life,
Joyce? Perhaps it's just that I'm careful.
Say, who do you suppose that fool was up there on the ridge? Didn't know there was anyone else hunting in this neighborhood outside of our own little group.
Didn't see anyone.
Say, Joyce, you were over there on the ridge for a while. Did you see anyone?
No, I didn't, Betty. Not a soul.
I'm telling you, it's getting to be quite dangerous up around this neck of the woods. Isn't a season goes by without somebody getting killed? I certainly hope something can be done about it.
Any suggestions, Doc, like bulletproof suits of armor for all hunters?
Oh, wonderful.
Well, now, perhaps that wouldn't be such a bad idea.
Oh, no.
I'd like
that. Hey, Billy, wasn't a friend of yours killed up here last year, Martin, Martin Benson?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, honey. Well, are we all just going to stand here holding our drinks? Why don't we, toast, huh? To our host and hostess, the happiest married couple I know.
Aw, Billy.
Hey, outside of us, baby.
Oh. To the Wellers, then. Joyce,
and Gordy.
Thanks. Thanks.
Now, I'd like to drink to you, darling. To you and your miraculous escape from death.
Thanks, Joyce.
You were lucky, weren't you, Gordy?
Not lucky, darling. As I said before, just careful.
You watch Joyce as she smiles at you and then turns and walks away and mingles with the guests. A quarter of an hour later, you manage to slip away, hurry into your den, to the cabinet where you keep your gun collection. Opening it, you remove a dueling pistol. It takes only a few minutes for what you have to do. Then you step out on the terrace and stroll casually along the flagstone walk, puffing quietly on a cigarette. Then voices from the garden reach you.
Sure, baby, sure. So you didn't know. But look, we don't mention the name Martin Benson around here.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's just that Martin was Gordy's best friend. They were pretty close, and Martin's death sort of knocked Gordy for a loop, that's all.
Okay, but from what I heard...
And what have you heard?
Well, Billy, maybe this Martin Benson wasn't such a good friend after all.
What do you mean?
Well, wasn't there some talk about Martin playing around with Joyce? And Gordy never knew about it.
That's enough, baby.
Well, that's what I heard, Billy.
Okay, forget it, huh? So Gordy never found out, and it's just as well. Let's drop it.
Okay.
They've known all along, haven't they, Gordon? About your wife, Joyce, and your best friend, Martin Benson. But not once did they suspect that you were aware of that romance. That you were responsible for Martin's death. It had all been so simple getting rid of him, hadn't it? A hunting accident. Martin killed with his own gun. And there had never been any question about that accident. Never a question in anyone's mind, except Joyce. Somehow she knew, didn't she, Gordon, that you had killed Martin, the man she really loved, and she was going to make you pay for it with your own life. You knew long ago that you couldn't run away. She'd follow you to the ends of the earth. You decided there was only one thing to do. Stay with Joyce and get rid of her before your luck ran out. That evening in your den, as your guests look over your gun collection.
Goodness, I've never seen so many guns in all my life.
Oh, this isn't all, Betty. Gordy's got another room full in town. He's just mad about guns.
Here's a new one I picked up a couple of weeks ago, Bill. How do you like it?
Hey, that's a beaut. Real old dueling pistol, huh?
Oh, boy.
Let me see it, Billy.
Hey, don't grab like that, baby.
Oh, it sure is heavy. It isn't loaded, is it?
Oh, don't worry, Betty. Gordon's very careful about things like that.
Oh, golly, I don't see how anybody could fire this.
You couldn't very well. Not the way you're holding it.
Well, why, Gordy?
Here, I'll show you. You wrap your hand around it like this.
Uh-huh.
That's it. And this finger goes around the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Well, look at that. I hardly touched it.
Well, that's what they call a hair trigger, baby. Clicks off just like that. Hey, what's the matter, Gordy?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all.
Well, it's a good thing it wasn't loaded. Gee, it was pointed right at Joyce.
Yeah, it was. Like that,
as it was. Wasn't it, Gordon?
Joyce.
Darling, you're neglecting our guests. What are you doing out here on the terrace?
Oh, I just wanted a breath of air.
Well, we've all decided to run down to the village for a while. Want to come along?
No, thanks. I think I'll stay here, if you don't mind.
All right. We won't be long, darling. Don't get lost.
By the way, Gordon.
Yes?
I thought you were the careful type.
What do you mean?
Do you generally keep loaded pistols in your collection?
Of course not.
That dueling pistol you were showing Betty a little while ago, it was loaded.
What?
That is, it was when I first looked at it, before dinner. I took the bullets out of it then. Good thing I did. I might have been killed.
I guess this is your lucky day, too.
Yes. We've both been lucky today, haven't we, darling? I wonder whose luck will run out.
The pattern is clear, isn't it, Gordon? For the struggle between you and your wife, Joyce. When Martin Benson died, it didn't end anything.
Rather, it was the beginning of the quiet tension, the terror. You knew long ago that there would be no running away. A divorce from Joyce wouldn't settle anything. She'd follow you anywhere. She wants to kill you, doesn't she, Gordon? Somewhere, somehow, someday, she'll kill you. If you don't kill her first. It's been touch and go for so long now, hasn't it? Between two would-be killers who appear to everyone else as a comfortably, happily married couple. But now another way occurs to you, Gordon. A frame-up against Joyce. Something to get her out of the way. If only you can make it look as if she tried to kill you. Give her the opportunity and then take advantage of it. You start to set this up in a conversation with your good friend, Dr. Perryman.
Oh, come now, my boy. The idea that someone is actually trying to kill you is ridiculous. Fantastic.
I don't think so, Doc. And you wouldn't either in my position. But, well, you were along right behind me when that shot came whistling out of nowhere on the ridge yesterday.
Of course. A careless hunter. An accident. You said so yourself.
Yes, but I've been thinking about it, Doc. Thinking about some other accidents, too.
What?
You remember several months back on the lake, my motorboat, the explosion? I was lucky to get out of it alive.
Well, yes.
Then a month ago, coming down the ridge road, my car suddenly going out of control. Hitting that telephone pole was the only thing that saved me from going over.
The road is dangerous. Hairpin curves and the way you drive.
Yeah, fortunately, I wasn't speeding.
See here, Gordon. Do you mean to tell me that...
Yes. Then yesterday in the canyon.
But who, Gordon? Why?
I don't know.
Who would want to kill you? You're not disliked. Your friends, your wife, all loyal, devoted.
I wonder, Doc. I wish I could believe that all the way.
You can, Gordon. You should.
Well, I'll try, of course. I'm telling you all this because... Well, because of the kind of a friend you've been. I wish you'd remember this conversation, Doc. Frankly, I'm worried.
Certainly I'll remember. I'll keep my eyes open, naturally.
But you don't believe such things are possible.
No, I didn't say that. Look, let's stop this talk, Gordon. You got me worried now.
And that's all you want for the moment, isn't it, Gordon? To have Dr. Perryman concerned. Later, his suspicions will be easily aroused. Suspicions against Joyce because of what you're going to do. You wait now, casting around in your mind for some plan of action, the frame. It suggests itself a few days later at the lodge, just a small thing, involving an open gas jet on a gas heater.
Gordon! Gordon, are you all right? Betty, shut that thing off.
Mm-hmm. What?
Oh, he was only asleep.
What is this? What's wrong? Say, isn't that gas I smell?
You bet it is. You better have something done about this jet. It's much too loose. Something must have fallen against it.
What's happening? What's this excitement, Bill?
Oh, it isn't anything.
Oh, yes, it is, Doctor. Gordon was asleep here in the chair, and that gas jet was open.
Oh, how do you suppose...
Well, it's very loose. Could have been an accident.
I suppose it's dangerous.
Kill someone.
Now, let's stop worrying about it. Just an accident. Don't you think so, Doc?
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course.
What's the matter, darling? You're all right.
Sure.
We better have this heater fixed. That's all. Well, the jet's loose.
Really?
I can't understand it.
Well, we must have it attended to right away.
Yes. You better, Joyce.
The look in Joyce's eyes is what you want, isn't it, Gordon? She isn't thinking of having the gas jet fixed. Not at all. She's thinking of what a convenient way this could be. After all, the guests have seen it. Yeah, very convenient. And you smile to yourself, deciding that you'll help her along with her plan. The following evening, you put it all in motion. It begins as your guests prepare to leave for a party at a neighboring lodge.
Look, I'm sorry to back out at the last minute this way, but I've got a headache. A bad one.
Oh, yes.
I better stay here. Just take it easy. Get some rest.
Oh, well, what about you, Joyce? Coming?
Oh, of course, Betty. That is, unless
Gordy'd rather I stay here.
No, there's no need for that, Joyce. I'll be all right. You run along.
You rest, then. Maybe a little nap, hmm? Do you good?
Yes. Yes, I'll stretch out in the den.
Well, come on, kids. Let's go. You want to come along in our car, Joyce?
No, I'll take mine. I have some things to get in the village first. You run along. I'll join you at the Jellison's later.
Okay. Let's away!
You watch them as they leave. Your guest and Joyce. A moment later, Phil's sedan roars past the lodge, starts down the grade. Joyce's neat little convertible right behind her. She's up to something, isn't she, Gordon? The way she suggested that you rest so all of them could hear. You wait quietly in the den, wait for Joyce to come back. As you know, she will. Then...
In here, Joyce.
You don't seem surprised, darling.
That you came back? No, I knew you'd be back.
I thought perhaps you'd change your mind about going over to the Jellisons. I only wanted to see if...
I still have my headache.
Would a drink help?
Why, how thoughtful of you, dear. Yes, it might help very nicely.
I'll take a couple.
Let me...
No, no trouble, darling.
Thanks.
You know, Gordy, sometimes you're hard to figure out.
Oh? And you're not at all.
That sounds sarcastic.
Merely appraising. Joyce.
Yes?
What sort of sleeping pills did you pick up in the village?
Sleeping pills? Whatever are you talking about? Here, your drink.
Joyce, you're getting careless. Clumsy.
Am I?
You wouldn't want to exchange drinks now, would you?
Certainly. Here. Satisfied?
You anticipated that one, of course.
Did I?
Let's stop the game, Joyce. I know what you're up to.
What am I up to?
You want to put me to sleep. Fix it so I'm just sitting here, resting, as you put it. Then somehow the gas jet finds its way on again, and I'm the unsuspecting accident victim. No one will know that you ever came back here from the village. You went directly over to the Jellisons' party.
You have it all figured out, don't you?
Yes, and it won't work.
I guess not. I wouldn't expect such a careless, clumsy handiwork. Well, cheers. Really afraid, aren't you, Gordon?
Of the drink, yes. But not of you. I'm not afraid of you anymore, Joyce. Not in the least.
It sounds ominous.
I might as well tell you how ominous. I intend to take an overdose of sleeping pills and turn on the gas.
Suicide? How nice of you, Gordon.
Not suicide. Attempted murder.
What are you talking about?
You do have a box of sleeping tablets in your purse, don't you, Joyce?
I?
Of course. I'll only borrow a few. Put the box back in your purse after I've seen you on your way.
You're out of your mind.
Not quite. But it has to look good, Joyce. Your attempt on my life.
You're a fool, Gordon. I'm afraid we'll both have to check our plans for a while.
Not me, Joyce. But you will. You see, in a few minutes, you're going to have an accident. Your car is going off the road with you at the wheel.
I see. And I'll be found that way with the box of sleeping tablets in my purse.
The ones they'll believe you slipped into my drink. Oh, I fully intend to take them, you know. Then just at the right moment, I'll call the hospital. They'll find me here, unconscious, the gas on. But they'll find me just in time.
After my car accident, you mean?
That's right, Joyce.
You have been thinking overtime, haven't you?
You know, Joyce, you're forcing me to do this.
Am I?
If you'd only tried to understand.
Understand murder?
There was no other way.
You could have given me a divorce and I asked for
it. I didn't want a divorce.
You knew I loved Martin.
You knew. I thought you knew you did.
You knew I did. You knew I loved him. With everything I had. That's why you killed him and made it look like a hunting accident. But you didn't get away with it, Gordon. You cheated the law, but you're going to pay just the same. I'll make sure of that.
I'm sorry, Joyce. I hate the idea of punching that beautiful jaw, but you leave me no choice.
You carry the unconscious Joyce down to her car, place her on the front seat next to you. Then you start down the ridge road. And as you reach a sharp curve, you leap clear.
Goodbye, Joyce.
goodbye for good.
Back at the lodge, you pour yourself another drink. Dissolve the sleeping tablets in it. Then you drink. You step over to the gas jet on the heater and turn it on. Sitting in the big easy chair, the telephone at your elbow, you wait. The minutes tick by. You find yourself becoming drowsy. Then you're sinking into a warm, black fog.
Married couple I know.
You shake your head. Try to clear the haze from your mind.
I wonder whose luck will run out first, darling.
You're breathing heavily now. The walls are closing in on you.
Gordon was asleep in a chair. The gas was on.
The room seems to be swaying beneath you. The black fog sweeps in again. And you fight to keep your eyes open. Now, Gordon, now is the time. You can't wait another moment. You reach for the telephone. It's going to be close, isn't it, Gordon? Everything's going just the way you planned it.
2, 5, 7.
The small crowd around the wrecked car included the party guests. Only Dr. Perryman wasn't there as Joyce's lifeless body was lifted from the crumbled mass of glass and metal. The guests were shocked, spoke in low, nervous tones to one another, horrified by what had happened in the space of a few hours. Presently, a police car returned to the scene. Dr. Perryman and the sheriff stepped out and hurried down the path to join the others.
Doc, I thought you went up to get Gordon. Where is...
Up at the lodge, Bill.
Well?
Gordon's dead.
What did you say, Sheriff?
Accident, I guess. The gas was turned on in his den, where we found him. Rolled out on the floor. His hands still clutching the telephone.
He must have tried to phone for help, Bill. But he didn't have a chance.
What do you mean?
The telephone lines were down. When Joyce's car crashed down the bank, it knocked over a telephone pole. And all the phone lines along with it.
East is east and west is west and the wrong one I have chose. Let's go where you'll keep on wearing those frills and flowers and buttons and bows, rings and things and buttons and bows. Don't bury me on the lone prairie, take me where the seamed grows. Let's move down to some big town where they love a gal by the cut of her clothes, and you'll stand out in buttons and bows. I love you in buckskin, our skirts that you've homespun, but I love you longer, stronger, where your friends don't tote a gun. My bones denounce the buckboard bounce and the cactus hurts my toes. Let's vamoose where the gals keep using those silks and satins and linen that shows, and you're all mine in buttons and bows. Buckskin, our skirts that you homespun, but I love you longer, stronger, where your friends don't tote a gun. My bones denounce the buckboard bounce and the cactus hurts my toes. Let's vamoose where the gals keep using those silks and satins and linen that shows, and you're all mine in buttons and bows. Give me eastern trimming where women are women in high silk hose and peekaboo clothes and French perfume that rocks the room, and you're all mine in buttons and bows. Buttons and bows. Buttons and bows. Buttons and bows.
I have flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours. And ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.